Welcome to episode 7 of Positively Geared. My name is Alex Augustiniak. And in today's episode, we'll be discussing the topic manufacturing growth. Manufacturing growth is the concept of creating instant equity in any investment property and is a very overlooked topic in the world of investment. Hi, Lloyd.
Alex, how are you going?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, really well, thanks.
Very good. We're talking about manufacturing growth today.
We are indeed. Yeah, a topic that very close to my heart.
Excellent. Well, I think for a lot of people listening, they're probably wondering, you know, what does manufacturing growth actually mean? So walk us through, what is manufacturing growth?
Well, effectively, most people buy property with the idea that you buy and you wait for capital growth. So you buy, you hope that the market's going to increase over a few years, your property's going to be worth more in the future. Manufacturing growth means that you actually can control the, the equity in the property yourself. So doing something to the property that allows it to increase in value. Now, there's a number of different ways that we can do that, which we'll cover off, but that could be through a renovation or development or something like that.
Sure. And why is that important to you, Lloyd?
It's very important to me, I guess, because when I first started investing, I had no strategy whatsoever. And I was just sort of buying, and I was doing what a lot of people do and what I was sort of told to do at the time, which is to sort of just buy and just wait for growth and everything like that. And I guess I was buying and praying rather than buying with a strategy. The first three or four properties that I bought weren't really getting any growth in the market, although I was actually buying them in good locations at the time. One of the main reasons for that was I was buying at the wrong time of the cycle when I bought them post the Sydney 2000 Olympics. So the market had just boomed and then it had just started to decline. Buying properties, I thought, you know, I'm doing the right thing here. I'm getting into the market. Yet I felt in a lot of debt. I was negatively geared. And that's when things started to change for me, when I actually started to think about manufacturing growth and actually trying to control my destiny in the market rather than just doing what everybody else does, essentially.
Just listening to what you've explained, Lloyd, I think it's a very good takeaway for a lot of people listening, just how important this is. And I think, is it fair to say it can sort of help people that are investing navigate challenging markets where they don't necessarily get to have, you know, absolute control over the timing in terms of when they're purchasing, and it just allows them to sort of, you know, put themselves in a position where they can sort of create some equity quickly, or not overnight, but in a relatively quick time.
Absolutely. Look, people don't have, no one has a crystal ball, but we all try to buy in markets that we hope are going to grow in value. Now, we might be buying where there's rising population, where there's new infrastructure, where there's government spending, where people want to live and there's low vacancy rates and all that kind of stuff. Other people try to buy in hotspots, which is something that I don't really believe in, but all those kind of things, they don't really guarantee that you're going to get any real growth. I feel that to be able to really move forward quicker, you need to be able to control the market yourself, because I think one of the things you should be doing when you're building up a portfolio is be able to leverage off your investments. If you buy a property and then you wait for growth and that growth doesn't happen, then you actually get stuck. And that's why most people, most property investors never get past one or two properties, because they're buying the wrong property in the wrong location where it just doesn't do anything. And the worst thing you can do is buy a property and then 5 or 10 years later have it not improve much in value to when you bought it. But if you buy a property and you actually do something with it, so 6 or 12 months later, you've actually forced some value into the property. You've actually increased the value, so the equity, and you've also in turn increased the rental yield, then you're in a better position. And what that means is that you can leverage off that equity to get yourself into another property deal. So instead of waiting perhaps 5 years to get into another property, or having to save up another deposit for several years, you essentially can actually maybe get into another property 6 or 12 months later, because you've actually increased equity in that first property very quickly. And then you can, you know, use that equity to get into another property and then repeat the process, and you can build the portfolio much quicker.
I think it's, you know, it's a very important tool to have up your sleeve as an investor. And you know, just in conversation with you now, talking about the reasons why it can really help people break that glass ceiling when they're trying to build a portfolio of properties. I think it's absolutely paramount that everybody listening today takes on board and possibly applies this strategy to some properties in their portfolio at the moment, where they feel they've possibly, you know, bought at the wrong time or in the wrong location, and they're trying to sort of break through. And I think this is, would it be fair to say it's really important to master this topic, if you like, in terms of if you want to succeed in a big portfolio or even a small one?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, we've also spoken about where, you know, people might be holding a property that hasn't done much over the years, or it might have even gone backwards in value. And then there should be, you know, whether we should be selling it, whether we should be keeping it, whether we're going to be selling it at a loss and everything. But even just forcing some value into that property might actually help you get out of the issues that you're in. But certainly, yeah, keeping that up your sleeve. And it doesn't mean that every single time you buy a property, you have to renovate it. It doesn't mean that every time you buy a property, you need to be looking for something that's really run down and that you're going to have to renovate it. That's not necessarily for everybody. And, you know, people sometimes worry about, you know, tradesmen, tradespeople and all that kind of stuff. Of course, yeah, when you're doing things like that, if you're not an expert in that field, you just get your own tradespeople, own builders in to do that, to do the work and everything like that. And then you just need to make sure that it's cost effective and the numbers work out. So it's not as if you actually have to do everything yourself there. But I think essentially keeping it up your sleeve. So yeah, not doing it with every property that you're buying, but certainly making sure that that's an option that you can be using, particularly if you're buying in a market that isn't necessarily known as a high growth market. I think people who buy in the Sydney and Melbourne markets are always going to do relatively well because of the growth that happens in these markets. But outside Sydney and Melbourne, most markets don't actually move that much. You know, a lot of people talk about Brisbane, but Brisbane hasn't really boomed since 2006. And, you know, people are still talking about it and everything. And the thing is that, you know, people go up there to invest and then it becomes oversupplied and everything like that. So what I recommend people doing if they're investing in one of the other capital cities or a regional area is actually looking for how they can actually manufacture some equity in a property they buy rather than just buying and holding. Because buying and holding for growth is a really slow way to, you know, to creating wealth.
And obviously waiting for that growth to come, which, by the way, might not ever come, or it might come over a very drawn out period of time. I suppose it becomes opportunity cost then, doesn't it? Because you're effectively tying up resources and money into that particular asset on the hope that it will improve. And I think manufacturing growth is a good way to just give yourself a really solid foundation, particularly like you said, when you're buying outside of some of the stronger metropolitan markets like Sydney or Melbourne.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I refer to this a lot in my book, Positively Geared, actually, because that book's really about how you can get into the market with only a $40,000 deposit. Now, that means obviously not buying in Sydney to start with, but if you buy into a regional area where prices are cheaper, you can certainly get in there. But the idea is to still build up a portfolio. So what I talk about in the book is how you can actually manufacture some growth in a property and use that equity to leverage into other, perhaps better markets. So you buy into a regional area, only spend $250,000, $300,000 on a property, and then do a bit of a cosmetic renovation or maybe a subdivision on that property, force some value, force some equity into that property, and then repeat the process. And that's something you should really be doing in those areas, because if you buy into a country area, it could be a long time waiting for any growth. So these strategies are really important, particularly if you're in an area that doesn't have a lot of growth and you're wanting to build up a portfolio.
What were some of the, referring back to sort of your earlier days building this portfolio, what were some of the challenges you faced, Lloyd, before you sort of could break into more of the blue chip Sydney or, you know, any other major city style properties? What, in terms of having to manufacture growth, were there any challenges that you faced along the way in terms of, for example, raising capital to renovate after you'd committed to a loan? What was that journey like?
I guess the biggest hurdles are always trying to raise that deposit. And I think for me, after I bought my first property, it was quite a while until I sort of bought my second property. Part of that was also because I wasn't really thinking I was going to be an avid property investor at the time. So I didn't sort of jump into the property market really quickly. I sort of bought one property and then a few years later, I'd bought another. And when I'd done that, I'd sort of been saving money along the way as well. And fortunately, I'd built up a little bit of equity in my first property. But by the time I got to sort of about my second or third property, obviously, you know, saving money is hard when you're sort of just working that 9-to-5 job. And of course, you've got your finance barriers. So you know, it's hard to get, you know, good blue chip properties at the time when you're on sort of a fairly low, fairly modest sort of income and not saving a lot of money as well. So for me, it was about investing in areas that are in some of the outer suburbs where you're actually getting into the market cheaper. And when I looked at what sort of deposit I'd have to pay on a property, I was trying to minimize that deposit. So either going in at a 5 or 10% deposit. Back in those days, sometimes they actually allowed you to sort of pay a 5% deposit. These days, a lot, you know, with the bank's lending criteria, it's often, you know, they require 20%. You can still do 10% these days, paying, you know, lender's mortgage insurance and everything. So what I tried to do is do a sort of a 10% deposit, even if I had a little bit more, because that little bit that's left over, I could then use that towards renovation to sort of manufacture equity to get into my next property and everything like that. But you know, the big thing for me was actually when I did my first duplex and did a subdivision there, and that was a different type of manufacturing equity, which wasn't actually a renovation, of course.
So Lloyd, just back to, I guess, finding access to that capital, because I think for people that are sort of embarking on their first or second property, that probably at that point in time, the banks aren't going to look at them as very creditworthy. I think once, you know, people build up a bit more of a portfolio and they've got a strong track record, possibly it becomes easier to get access to extra funds. But for those who are sort of starting out, whether they're in low or high income producing jobs, is there anything that you found worked really well for you to sort of allow you to do that work without also putting you in a position where you just felt like you were really packed to the hilt in terms of carrying a lot of pressure or being quite risk adverse?
Yeah, look, the main thing for me was definitely trying to buy the lower price properties. So, and that's why I still advocate people buying sort of in regional areas and outer suburbs where the properties are cheaper. So I remember when I look at, say, my second property that I bought was in out of Ingleburn in southwest Sydney, $260,000, needed a bit of work, did some work on the kitchen, did a complete paint job and a little bit of other, you know, basic cosmetic reno stuff on it when I moved in. And, you know, I moved out of my first property and did some work on that and then turned that into an investment and everything like that. So one of the things when you're raising, you know, you're raising that deposit is just to make sure that you're not overcommitting yourself. So don't think that you need to go and, you know, maximize your borrowing power and everything like that. So although the banks were happy to lend me a little bit more at the time than what I borrowed, I always wanted to go a little bit less than what the banks could lend me, because that also meant that I could actually have sort of borrowing power for next time as well, because you don't want to ever max yourself out where possible. And if you borrow less than your limit, then you're actually paying less deposit, you're paying less stamp duty. And if you're borrowing more than 80%, then you've got to pay lender's mortgage insurance. But the less you borrow, then the less relative mortgage insurance you're paying as well. So all of those combined actually help you, and particularly if you're risk adverse, then yeah, all those sort of things count as well. But look, I'd also recommend to people what banks like to see is a savings plan, a bit of a savings pattern. They want to see that at least 5% of your deposit is genuine savings. At the moment, the government has the 5% first home buyers plan in place, which actually is effectively only for about 10,000 people, 10,000 first home buyers, but it certainly is helping a lot of people. But even so, even without that, you can actually, you know, if you were to get a gift or borrow some money from your family, from your parents or something, then the banks will actually accept that as well, as long as they can see 5% genuine savings. So, you know, you can have put down a 20% deposit and the banks will accept that some of it's a gift, as long as 5% is genuine savings. You just need to show that. The other thing I also recommend to help getting that finance and everything is to make sure that your bank statements are fairly clean and everything as well, in terms of your spending habits and everything like that.
Cool. So a lot of those core concepts, Lloyd, around finance, we've covered off earlier into our series on the money episode. So we do encourage any listeners that haven't tuned into those two episodes yet to have a listen. Going back to, I guess, the core concept of manufacturing growth, has there ever been an instance, whether early or in present day, where you've had to do that? And, you know, that's helped you get out of a sticky situation. And what does it typically look like? How does somebody know when they have manufactured growth? What's the process there? I mean, is it a case of getting the property revalued? What does manufacturing growth actually look like? And how do you know when you've done it?
Yeah, well, I guess, yeah, there's about three questions there. So I'll answer that sort of the second part of that first. So manufacturing growth really, and if I just use some basic numbers, if we look at the equity in a property, which is basically the difference between the fair valuation, the market valuation of a property, which is maybe based on what a bank valuation would give you, and then the actual how much you owe on the property. So if you've got, say, a $400,000 loan on the property and the bank values the property at $600,000, then you've got $200,000 of equity in the property. Now, if you do something to that property and you raise the equity in there, with either through a renovation or some kind of subdivision, for example, and then the bank comes back and they revalue it at $700,000, then you've got an extra $100,000 of equity. So that's $300,000 of equity. So manufacturing equity looks like simply when the bank revalues it at a higher amount, and that's how you know that you've actually, you know, raised that equity. So you don't actually know. So you can do the work. So you can do some renovation on a property, and then you can, you know, assume that you've raised the equity in a property, but you won't know until the bank actually values it, or if you sell the property and you sold it for a higher amount than what it was worth before you did the renovation.
And in terms of, I guess, people that might be in a situation right now where they've got a property in their portfolio, or they're looking to buy in an area because their decision to buy there is driven predominantly by affordability and serviceability, but they have identified that area as a place that might require a bit of this legwork in order to help them effectively start or build their portfolio. Would you generally recommend that they have the property revalued once the work's been done? What does that sort of look like?
Well, it really comes back to strategy. So if you're going to manufacture equity in a property, then you've got to sort of have a reason for doing that. So often people might be buying a property that needs some work, but they don't really need the equity right now. So they may not actually do any work on it just now. Other times, people may not actually be looking for equity right now, but they might want to increase their rental income if they're just looking for cash flow. But if the strategy is to buy a property and then have that property help you get into another property in, you know, 6 or 12 months' time, then I'd recommend you actually look at increasing that equity on that property, you know, as soon as you buy it. But there's a few things that you need to do and you need to be careful of, particularly around the numbers. So let's just look at a couple of basic things. If you're going to do a renovation, then you need to make sure that you're buying into an area where there's quite a lot of difference between unrenovated properties and renovated properties. So if you buy a four-bedroom fibro home and up the street there's other four-bedroom fibro homes that are renovated, they need to be selling at a fair difference. If there's not much difference in value between the two, then you know that you'll actually overcapitalize if you go and do a renovation. So it's not the right area to be doing a renovation in. So you need to actually be looking at that. And then you need to do some numbers, do a feasibility. What I always do is get tradies to come in and do some quotes during that period before we go unconditional on the contract. So it might be either before exchange, it might be after exchange while you're still within a cooling off period. If you're in Queensland, for example, you have a 21-day finance clause there anyway, so you've got a bit of extra time to, you know, to get those sort of things done in. But you need to make sure that you're getting those sort of quotes so you know what you're up for, because you don't want to overcapitalize. I always look, when I'm doing a renovation, that you should be trying to make about $3 for every $1 that you spend. So if you're going to spend $20,000 on a renovation, you should be making $60,000 in equity there. If that doesn't work out for you, then it's probably not the right place to be doing the renovation. So you really need to know the costings around what you're going to do and what areas you should spend the renovation on, because sometimes it might just need a bit of paintwork, floor coverings, window coverings, and maybe just updating the kitchen and the bathroom. You don't need to necessarily put a new kitchen in, because that becomes very expensive. So you really need to think of what will appeal to the demographics of that area and things like that.
Some really good points there, Lloyd, and I think just a few key takeaways for anybody listening that I just got from this conversation is that everything always comes back to strategy. You know, depending on that, there's a lot of variables involved to determine how far you need to go to manufacture growth. Obviously, depending on the region and state you're buying in, that's going to sort of change the rules of engagement as to what due diligence you can do prior to buying. However, obviously, it's very important to always do your feasibility before you do commit to something, and also that possibly later down the tracks when you'll look at manufacturing growth in a property, depending on what your financial goal is at that point in time. Was there anything you'd like to add to that, Lloyd, before we sort of move on?
I guess we've talked about sort of renovation as an example. There's other ways, obviously, that you can manufacture growth on a property. I can use one example that we we often do, which is buying a house on a large block of land. Quite often we might subdivide that land through a Torrens title subdivision and then build something out the back, either a house or maybe a duplex. And if you build a duplex, then you've effectively turned something that was one property into three properties, because you're keeping the house and then you've got the duplex. So effectively you've got a cash flow property of three properties there, and then you can either keep them for rent or you can sell them. Sometimes what you can do is buy a property like that, and if you can't afford to go through all that work at the time, you might just buy the property, realizing that's got the potential to do a development on later on. And that's something that's a real winner for a lot of stuff that we do. So it's not a matter of just buying, you know, you don't need to buy a property and then feel you need to go through a whole development process right now. It's a matter of buying the property and seeing the potential in that later on. A simpler process that a lot of people do is just a straight out duplex build, which you can either do as a knockdown rebuild on a block of land, or a cheaper version would be to just get some vacant land, build the duplex on it. That works quite well. Duplex being two units, on completion you'd subdivide the property, say you've got two units on two separate titles. And again, the key to that is just making sure you're building for less than what you can sell for. So effectively, if you can build, you know, do the whole project for say 600,000, and you know that each unit's going to sell for 400,000 each, then you've that's a total of 800,000. Then you've created 200,000 equity in it. So that's just basic numbers there. But that's again, you've got to do your numbers, do your feasibility, and again, I talk about that a fair bit in the book as well, because that's something that really got me going in my portfolio, is when I built my first duplex as well, and found that the equity I created was twice as much as what I was earning in a whole year as working as a teacher at the time. So there's several ways that you can create equity and things like that, but quite often through that strategy you don't necessarily need to do the subdivision straight away. You might build a duplex and then decide that you want to get the equity later. So again, it just depends when you want to get that equity and what your strategy is about that. But the thing is, having the property that has the potential to be able to do that is the key to that.
Sure. And for those listening, Lloyd, you really cover off on this topic in a lot more depth in your book, Positively Geared. So we highly recommend anybody listening that's very intrigued on this particular topic to grab a copy of that book, because you've got some golden nuggets in there. Moving on, Lloyd, but still on the topic, what I find an interesting concept is that people that are looking for high growth areas, obviously there's different investment objectives depending on the individual, depending on strategy, and we talk about that throughout a whole series. It's really dependent on the person's strategy. But what I sort of identified on this topic is that depending on how much growth you want to manufacture, different areas, whether it's major markets like Sydney, Melbourne or regional, do you find there's different price points or different locations which will allow to achieve higher manufactured growth in a shorter period of time?
Yes, definitely. And the other thing to keep in mind also is that, because I get this question a lot, is if you're just going to build a duplex, is it going to be somewhere in a regional area where there's not going to be any growth or anything like that? And that's never the case. We're always targeting areas where we feel there's going to be a lot of organic growth as well, because sometimes people might want to build and then sell the property. But if you're building a portfolio, you want to keep the property. So a key to it is to get into an area where you can get long-term growth as well. So I like to talk a lot about the property trifecta, which is the instant equity, the cash flow and the growth, and trying to get all three. Now, it's quite a well-known fact that the higher the growth market, the lower the rental yield, and the other way around. So if you're into a really high cash flow market, you're likely to get a little bit less growth, or quite often a lot less growth. What you can do to combat that is getting something that's maybe, you know, a dual income type property. So you can get into a good market that's going to actually be growth, and you can combat that by having dual income there. So certainly getting into the Sydney market and doing things like that will get you both. So Sydney's well known for being the lowest yielding market in the country. But if you're doing a dual income, then that certainly helps solve that problem. The price point is a bit of a barrier, obviously. So you always need to look at your finances there, as we've discussed before, and really look at what your budget is, what your perimeters are. There's always a solution to be able to move forward. So whether you've got $300,000 to spend on a property, or whether you've got $2 million waiting to spend, there's always solutions there. But there are different markets that do offer better solutions. So it comes down to strategy. Sometimes you may be holding high growth properties, you know, blue chip properties in capital cities, and but you need to complement that with something with really good cash flow. In that case, then getting something that's, you know, outside a capital city that's going to present with really good rental yield, albeit not as much growth, might be something that's really good for your strategy. So it really comes down to what you're looking to achieve and how that property will work within your portfolio. So that's why it's really important to actually know what you're trying to achieve with each property.
So once again, always back to strategy. Strategy is
absolutely
the cornerstone of everything in terms of building and growing a portfolio. Let's go back to the duplex development that you did sort of earlier on. You mentioned in previous episodes that was, you felt at the time, a big catalyst behind sort of helping you catapult into that next, I suppose, category in terms of building and growing your portfolio of properties. Were there any challenges associated with that particular build? Or probably a better question would be, have you had experience with clients that have sort of, you know, they've gone through the process of trying to build growth in an area where they feel they've possibly been stuck? What do you generally recommend to your clients or in your past experience to help people that are in that position where they've sort of, they feel like they've done everything they could and they're not quite sure what the next step looks like?
Yeah, I quite often get clients who are in a position where they feel they've done everything they can and not getting anywhere. Sometimes they really just need a mentor. And I think everybody needs a mentor, someone to sort of really help them, someone with experience. For me, I think I owned about 4 or 5 properties before I built my first duplex. Now, the 4 or 5 properties I had, I wasn't really getting anywhere. There wasn't much growth occurring on them. I was pretty negative cash flow and everything like that. When I went into my first development, although it was a big learning curve and I had a few issues with council, as I discussed before, and it was very unknown to me, you know, building and working with a builder and everything like that. The results I got was, yeah, they were just much better than what I was expecting. So yeah, that was a huge relief for me. I think what people really need to understand is how something can work to help get them out of the situation that they're in. People might have bought the wrong properties in the wrong locations or have been burnt. Quite often there's a reason for that. I've worked with people who've, you know, bought properties in places like, you know, Gladstone and or Mackay in Queensland and places where they're simply they're too reliant on maybe just the resources sector. There hasn't been any growth there. The market's collapsed and everything like that. There's kind of a reason behind what's happened, or maybe they bought in Brisbane, bought in the wrong location. If you buy well located properties and the fundamentals are right, you're going to do better. So it's a matter of really understanding what you can do. And in terms of, you know, getting a property that's going to help get you out of that situation, then you can certainly do that, as long as you actually understand how that's going to work for you. And if you're going to manufacture growth through, you know, for example, building a duplex, you just need to really have an understanding of why that's going to work for you and have some confidence around that. You know, look at the feasibility, see how the numbers work, see how much it costs to build, and see what the sales in the area are. And if the sales are, higher per individual unit than what you're actually building them for, then you can have a bit of comfort that that's going to work. But again, if you've had a little bit of, bad luck in the past, then it just takes a bit of confidence to get all that done.
Sure. And I mean, for those who haven't had the benefit of your experience and wisdom, is there often a conversation that you'll have with those clients around, okay, look, it's time to absorb a loss here, or it's time to move on and explore other opportunities?
Yes, absolutely is. So we always look at where they are now and what might be a good step to move forward. Now, sometimes people might be actually maxed out with a number of properties. They might be 6 or 7 or 8 properties, but really negative cash flow. I mean, if you've got 8 properties and you're losing $1,000 a week, and you're in a massive amount of debt, and sometimes the banks won't allow you to borrow anymore. So we need to have that conversation about how we can move forward. Part of that will be to actually sell the properties that are not performing very well and things like that, and that can take time. So we need to look at the long term. Sometimes people will be really keen to just move forward and do a duplex or something like that, but that may not be possible just yet. So we need to actually untangle the situation they're in. That may mean taking 6 months to actually sell 2 or 3 of their current properties, then getting their finance in order to be able to move forward to do the next deal. So we need to have those tough conversations and everything. But what's really important is that we look at those long-term goals, and we need to have that conversation as well. So people need to really share what they're looking to achieve over the next 10 years. So they may have had all these properties, had all these goals, but it hasn't worked for them at that stage. So we need to really look at how we can get there. And if we're looking at the long term, then, 6-12 months to try to untangle things is nothing compared to sorting things out over that long term. And particularly when we're looking at properties that can get you a fair bit of equity and good cash flow, it can turn things around straight away.
Lloyd, we've had a good look and had a good conversation around manufacturing growth. And I think a lot of listeners now will be quite grounded in the concept and why it's important to them. Walk me through a case study which you feel really exemplifies an instance where you've had to either advise a client or in your past career had to manufacture growth yourself.
I think one, I do have a client, I've got probably a few clients, but one client particularly that comes to mind, and this is a gentleman and his wife from Melbourne, but he was actually a little bit later in life. So he was in his mid-50s at the time. So I do work with people at all ages and all levels. But he'd come to me and was trying to, look for a way forward. So he had a few properties in Melbourne that just weren't performing very well in the apartment market there. He also had some overseas properties and he had a business that wasn't going so well. Obviously, he didn't have time on his side to be looking at trying to negative gear or wait for growth on his properties. So he specifically came to me to see if we could manufacture some growth, do a duplex and see what would work well for him. So we talked about the scenario of doing a duplex. He wanted to really help his cash flow out with his business. He wanted to try to get himself out of debt with some of his other properties and have some, have a bit of a plan over the next few years to move towards retirement in a very realistic way.
And how bad, Lloyd, would you describe his situation in terms of obviously age being a big determining factor and not having, as you mentioned, not having the benefit of another 20, 30 years for a portfolio to mature?
I guess most of us would like to feel that we're in a pretty good position by the time we're approaching retirement and maybe had paid off most of our debt and everything like that. He had a lot of debt, quite a bad situation, really, sort of putting it lightly. And certainly, he flew up from Melbourne. We had a conversation around it, went out to lunch and really tried to work out a plan. So it was quite a dire situation and something that I really felt we had to take very seriously into how we could actually help him move forward. So it certainly wasn't a matter of just trying to buy him a property and hoping for the best. There had to be a real plan of attack and a real strategy in place for him to be able to achieve and move forward from the position he was currently in.
So walk me through, let's start from your conversation over lunch when you first met. What did you identify were the biggest issues he was facing and how did you deal with that?
One of the biggest issues you face is when you're over 55 years of age, it gets more difficult to obtain finance. And banks also like to see an exit strategy put in place. So that was one thing. But the other thing also is that because of his level of debt, he was going to have trouble actually finding, being able to obtain finance. So we discussed how I could set him up with a good financial broker, good mortgage broker. That would have to be the first step to really see if we could get finance. And then we talked about the strategy of how if we got into a market where we could manufacture growth, do a good duplex deal and really make some good money on it, but also try to get into a market that's actually growing in value too. So during the time frame of the whole project that the market would actually grow in value, then he's not only just getting that instant equity, but he's also getting some capital growth along the way. So that was kind of the strategy behind that. So I put him in touch with a mortgage broker, to which he had a little bit of trouble obtaining finance. So that was always a bit of a hitch there. It took quite a while. He wasn't able to obtain finance in his personal names, but he managed to get it put through as a trust. So fortunately, he did get finance, but just barely enough to do this one build. I managed to secure him a good block at a pretty good price, and got him a really good price on a good build contract as well, with a lot of good inclusions in there at well under market value. So that sort of helped. But getting into the market, we really got in there at the right time, and this particular one was done in the Newcastle market, and the market did grow during that process as well.
And I suppose for this particular gentleman, what were some of his fears, obviously coming to you already being in a really bad position, and how, I guess, that transferal of belief from you that, you know, there is a way out of this and this is the way we're going to do it, which is the reason why we've dedicated a whole episode to this very topic. What were his sort of fears and concerns, and how did you deal with those?
His greatest fear was that he would be always in debt. He wouldn't be able to get out of debt by the time he was 65, and he didn't want to be passing on any debt to his children or anything like that. So that was one of his greatest fears. And the other fear was getting into another property investment that didn't work. So obviously, he was not interested in buying and holding for growth. He'd spoken to other buyers agents who were suggesting to buy a house in a good location in Melbourne or in Sydney, and it'll grow in value. He didn't have time up his sleeve for that. He wasn't interested in that. He wanted to actually make some money, in a shorter time frame, so actually make that equity. And the objective here was actually sell the property, because he actually needed to make that capital gain. So those were the two greatest fears that he had there.
What sort of strategies did you sort of propose or implement for, I suppose, one of the biggest challenges he may or may not have had, and you're about to fill me in on it, would be the holding costs while he is sort of going down the path of actually getting this project for completion and ready to go back to market. Is there something that you did to sort of help manage that, knowing that he was already in quite a sticky situation?
Yeah, so fortunately, he was in quite a bit of debt, but he had cash deposit, which was good. So he was in a position to actually be able to put deposit on a property. When I always look at deposits that people need to pay on properties, I always allow for holding costs and things like that too. So we look at that as the overall cost. We don't think of, okay, it's going to be a 10% deposit and then you've got to put holding costs at all as well. We just look at that overall. The feasibility allows for everything there. So that was something that we managed there. And we looked at the overall holding costs. And also explain to him how a construction loan works there, because the good thing about a construction loan is that when you buy the land, you're actually only buying and paying the interest on the land. The construction loan, you pay in stages, it's drawn down as the builder does certain stages. When they do the, when they pour the slab, then they do the frames and they do the brickwork and so on. So you actually aren't paying the entire loan until the completion. So that's actually good for cash flow. And so that makes the holding cost a little bit better at the start. And for that reason, that was actually a good strategy for him as well.
That's a really important takeaway, just the whole concept of construction loan versus home loan. And I can definitely see how if there's somebody in a similar position, obviously besides calling you and getting some assistance, it's good to know that, there is a way out. And just through, I suppose, having a really solid grounding in all of these different options available, that's a big head start to sort of move in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
So after that experience, or to refer to the case study that you've just discussed, what was the end result?
Well, basically, our client made over $300,000 profit on the project, which allowed him to pay off some of his other debt and also get out of some of his business debt and put him in a much better situation. Sold those properties. They were in a good market, so they sold very quickly. And then he was able to then pursue further further projects as well. So, so very good equity gain in a short amount of time. So, put him in a good situation, because the market also grew in value as well as the actual equity. So that was a surprisingly good result, better than I had anticipated actually. So that worked out quite well. We're really happy to be able to help him out and absolutely. And I've kept in touch with him ever since, and he's looking to do his next deal with this as well. So, yeah.
Very good. How important do you find timing in the market is and anticipating market cycles as part of the whole manufacturing growth matrix?
I don't find it that important really in terms of manufacturing growth, because you really can manufacture growth no matter what the market's doing. That's the whole point of that. So I think, looking at the market cycles and timing the markets and things is sort of a different sort of subject there. I think in this instance, I just really wanted to see if we could actually get into a market, because I'd predicted that the Newcastle market was actually going to boom. And so I thought, get into that market and you'll be able to get some capital growth as well as some instant equity. So we did really well there. But most of the time, that's not necessarily something you can no one's really got a crystal ball. So really, when you're manufacturing growth, you should really be focusing on that. You can't really be focusing on both there, because then you might end up with analysis paralysis, because you'd be worried about, oh, is this market going to grow or is it not going to grow? Or maybe it's not, maybe I won't invest there, or maybe I'll wait or whatever. So manufacturing growth is all about actually manufacturing growth and not having to wait for that market.
And that's a great way, that's a great segue really into, I suppose, summarizing the topic, isn't it? It's very much about creating growth within any isolated period of time, and it's not relying on what the market's doing now or what it's going to do.
Absolutely, for sure. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Lloyd, for your time.
Yep, all good, Alex. Yep.
That was a really good topic to cover off on, and I think it's probably one of the most underlooked aspects of being a property investor.
I think so. I think there's a lot of education around just holding for growth over the long term. Property investment is a long-term strategy, but you need to look at some of the elements within that, and I think manufacturing growth is something that more people should really look at.
Thanks so much for your time.
Cheers.
Manufacturing growth is certainly a way to create great equity overnight, and as Lloyd has explained, is a tool paramount to ensuring that you can continue to grow a portfolio of investment properties. Lloyd covers off on this topic in greater detail in his book, Positively Geared. I encourage you to purchase a copy of Lloyd's book so that you too can achieve your path to financial freedom. Join us for our next episode, where we discuss the property market cycle and debunk some of the myths associated with property market cycles in Australia.